Let's face it, work has gotten a lot harder in the last 2 years for everyone. That's why at Wrike, our goal is to make your work as easy and efficient as possible. We help companies like Walmart, Airbnb, and Google to collaborate and tame their overflowing inboxes. Visit us at Wrike.com. That's Wrike.com. And discover how we can help you do your best work. Wrike, where strategy meets infinite possibilities.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Jonathan Schanzer of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, the author John Schanzer. The new book is Gaza Conflict 2021, Hamas, Israel, and 11 Days of War. Jonathan gives us a very large view of 30 years in which Hamas has been gaining in strength. There were obstacles that Hamas had to overcome. One of them, surprisingly, was Yasser Arafat, who launched serial operations on the West Bank. When I was first introduced to Israel, it was during the Siege of Bethlehem, an operation launched by Yasser Arafat. However, he is to die soon enough. And that, to me, to my reading of Jonathan's book, opens up a road for Hamas that might not have been possible otherwise. However, the Palestinians are going to hold an election. I believe it's 2006. They're going to hold an election. What does that mean to Hamas? Why do they at that time say they will participate, Jonathan?
Okay, so the story is that Arafat is faced with a fateful decision in 2000. You've got Bill Clinton and Ehud Barak, then Prime Minister of Israel. They call for a summit to try to bring an end to the Oslo process and to the beginning of a new era of full peace between the Palestinians and Israelis. Arafat rejects this. He launches what's known as the Second Intifada, which is another asymmetric war. And that goes on through 2005. Arafat dies in late 2004. He was surrounded in his compound in Ramallah for several months. The Israelis were punishing him for launching this conflict. And when he passes away, we have the rise of Mahmoud Abbas, the new president, actually today, the president of the Palestinian Authority. But Mahmoud Abbas inherits chaos in the West Bank. The Second Intifada really laid waste to all of the progress that had been made in the intervening years. And at that point, it's very difficult to know who's in charge of what neighborhood, from one neighborhood to the next in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. So then we have the Bush administration in 2006. You have to recall that this at the time, we're fighting the war on terror here in the United States. And George W. Bush is convinced that democracy is the answer to all problems relating to terrorism. And he encourages the Palestinians to go to the polls to settle their differences. And he is rather confident that the Fatah faction, Mahmoud Abbas, will win. The polls proved wrong. Hamas was, in fact, very popular as a result of its so-called resistance to Israel. The violence that it had been carrying out against Israel had buoyed its prospects. And so when the final tally was made, Hamas emerged victorious, leading to a political standoff that we are still dealing with today.
And in 2007, Hamas makes its move. It's called a civil war in Gaza. I remember reporting on it, and there was no transparency. What triggered it? What was the outcome?
Well, what triggered it was the fact that the Israelis and the United States did not want Hamas to rule the West Bank and the Gaza Strip, that this is a terrorist organization that had a decade and a half of blood on its hands. And the idea that it would rule as the sovereign in these areas was just an anathema to American policy, to Israeli policy. And so it was widely rejected. And for a year, a stalemate ensued. And then Hamas made its move in 2007, where they launched an offensive inside the Gaza Strip. The goal was to take the territory by force, and they did. Over the course of several weeks, they killed a large number of Palestinians, pushed them off of tall buildings to their death, shot people in the legs and arms to ensure permanent disability. When the guns fell silent, we had a division between the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. Hamas was in full power in Gaza, and the PLO, the Fatah faction, clung to power in the West Bank. And that is the situation that we still see today, a Palestinian Authority divided between these two bitter political and military foes.
We've come back now to the moment where the Syria-Gaza wars are possible. Hamas now controls the Gaza Strip. We need to describe it, Jonathan, because there's too much assumption about what it is, what the territory looks like. What is the Gaza Strip? How does Hamas occupy it?
So the Gaza Strip is a tiny area along the Mediterranean coastline, just north of the Sinai Peninsula and at the bottom sort of southwest corner of Israel. And this is an area that's been at the crossroads of history for many years. European and Middle Eastern powers have long used Gaza as a way station in trade and in military activity. This is an area now that is roughly the size of Washington, D.C., and has 2 million people. So it's densely populated. It is really not well endowed in terms of economic opportunity. And so it's poor. It has a large number of Palestinian refugees. And of course, now since 2007, it's been ruled by a terrorist organization, which has only depleted its resources. Now, beginning in 2009, we began to see the series of conflicts that emerged with Israel, Hamas being in full control of this territory and really working assiduously to bring in rockets and other weaponry. We see the first conflict in 2009, then we see another one in 2012, then another one in 2014, and then again, one in 2021. So we've seen four rounds of these conflicts. They are very predictable. Hamas starts wars that it knows that it cannot finish. It is trying to fight against a regional power that is very advanced. Israel is small, but its military is one of the best in the world. And so Hamas knows that it will not win, but it subjects its population to misery. And what it does is it seeks out, it's trying to find probe for some Israeli weaknesses that perhaps can be exploited by Hezbollah, a stronger proxy to Israel's north in Lebanon, or Iran itself, which continues to wield Hamas as a proxy.
We'll come to the 2014 war because both of us attended it. You were having dinner on a rooftop in Jerusalem when the sirens went out. Was it unexpected, Jonathan?
It wasn't fully unexpected. We knew that there was a war that was happening. But when rockets begin to fly into Jerusalem itself, it's a surprise. This is, of course, the capital of Israel. But also one has to remember that Palestinians live there as well. And so when Hamas attacks what it views as its own capital, it is somewhat surprising. But this is a red line for the Israelis. When Jerusalem comes under attack, similarly, when Tel Aviv comes under attack, this is the moment where Israel drops the gloves and begins to respond with overwhelming force against Hamas inside the Gaza Strip. Hamas knows this. And so when they begin to fire there, they know what is coming. And really, I think that that sums up the conflicts that we continue to see. These are cyclical and they are very predictable. Hamas knows exactly what it's getting into when it targets cities like Jerusalem.
What are the weapons? We need to explore Hamas's tactics because they've been evolving over these years since 2007, when the civil war cleared the PA out and Hamas, the terror organization, took control of 2 million people. And knowing that it would be extremely difficult for law enforcement or military enforcement to get into the Gaza, they use rockets, of course. It starts with rockets M302 and M75, rocket mortars. Everything of significant value comes from Iran. How do they get it into Gaza? How do they smuggle a sophisticated weaponry from Iran to the Gaza Strip?
So for many, many years, Sudan was a crucial way station for these weapons. Sudan had, since their revolution in 1989, where the Muslim Brotherhood came to power, Omar al-Bashir, if you recall, this is a war criminal who was recently toppled in Sudan. He was allowing Sudan to be that way station. And so Iran would ship these weapons to Port Sudan in the south of the country. They would then be smuggled northward, and then they would be brought across the Sinai Peninsula of Egypt and then smuggled underground by way of tunnel into Gaza. Sometimes these rockets would come fully assembled. In some cases, they would be coming in parts, and Hamas would have to build them with some Iranian assistance. Certainly, their Hamas engineers had been trained often in Tehran in order to prepare for moments like these. But this was the weaponry that was used. But you have to remember, John, that it actually began with suicide bombings. Then the Israelis built the barrier that prevented the suicide bombers from coming through. Then the rockets began to fly because they needed to be able to bypass the barrier. And then when Israel developed Iron Dome, then we began to see Iron Dome being the defense system that is able to shoot down a lot of these rockets with great precision. That's when we began to see the tunnels that Hamas began to build with the idea of trying to attack that way as well.
Let's speak of the attack tunnels, because that was my experience in 2014. The rockets, yes, but the attack tunnels. And in fact, I spoke to a resident, a civilian resident outside of Sderot, who believed that she heard scratching underneath the ground because the tunnels were meant to go into civilian areas where the plan was martyr squads. Was that correct, Jonathan, that we're going to attack Israeli soft targets?
Correct. And 2014 was the first war where that was seen. It was the moment where the Israelis realized they had a real problem. And actually, it was during that war that Hamas launched a number of attempted attacks. There was actually one successful one, not done by way of the tunnels, but actually through frogmen who entered the Mediterranean Sea and found their way to Israeli territory and then attacked what was known as the Zikin base. And they were able to successfully kill a number of Israeli soldiers. But the idea was that they were going to start to carry out these commando attacks against civilian and military targets. But it has been a cat and mouse game between Hamas and Israel for many years. Israel continues to develop the defensive weapons to deter Hamas, and then Hamas develops new tactics to try to circumvent Israel's defenses.
The book is Gaza Conflict 2021, Hamas, Israel, and 11 Days of War. Jonathan Schanzer of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies is the author. He's also, importantly, our guide to what happens next. We've done fog of war. Now we're going to do fog of diplomacy. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
With any dream, the wind won't always be at your back. The sun won't always be shining, and some rain is going to fall. American Family Insurance is like a good solid roof that you can trust to protect your biggest dreams. With plans that could save you up to 23% when you bundle your home and auto. Also, you can continue to dream fearlessly, no matter what comes your way. American Family Insurance. Get a quote or find an agent at AmFam.com.
Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
You can't get much for $5 these days. Unless you go to Wendy's for a $5 Biggie Bag. Get your choice of double stack, junior bacon cheeseburger, or crispy chicken BLT. Plus, four-piece nugs, fries, and a drink. All for just $5.
You got that bag. You got that Biggie Bag. You got that bag.
That was smooth, wasn't it? That's how you're going to feel when you get that Biggie Bag at Wendy's.
U.S. price and participation may vary. Includes four-piece nuggets, small soft drink, and small fry. Prices may be higher in Alaska and Hawaii.